Well, the fascinating part to me is, and we're not going to call out specific retailers. That's not appropriate. But if here's the soundbite for me, 74% of consumers are going to see if the product's available online, and 17% of the retailers actually expose their on hands. What would be interesting as a research project for somebody in your astute organization, which is how many of them are actually leveraging RFID? So they should be up in the 95%, but they still don't expose their on hands. And why don't they do that?
Well, I will tell you this, that of the RFID adopters,
Okay.
96% offer BOPIS, ship to store, and the omnichannel elements or characteristics versus only 60% of retailers who don't use RFID. They don't offer BOPIS and ship from store and those type of things.
But
So,
I would argue BOPIS, forget about inventory accuracy and RFID. BOPIS is jack's to enter. If you don't do that in today's retail environment, you're done.
I agree. But if you think about why wouldn't a retailer offer BOPIS? It's because they don't have
They
any
don't.
confidence in their inventory,
Right.
right? I mean, they don't have any confidence.
Yeah, what I'm asking is a different question,
Well,
which
it
is
is, yeah.
we know there are big players out there, especially in the apparel. I mean, we haven't received 100% saturation, but there's a big chunk of the retail industry right now, especially the major players out there that are already using RFID for apparel,
Yeah.
but they still don't expose on hands to
Yeah.
customers,
Yeah.
right?
And right. And they absolutely should. Right.
Well, I think they should as well. I think the problem is, and we'll talk about this here in a little bit, I don't want to jump into it now, is they may say I have four of those, but they may not have four to sell. So two of them, we talked about this example before, two of them, let's just say if it's a television set, two of them, one of them could be in the back room in the claims department. We do have it, but it's not available for sale because the customer just returned it. The other one is hanging on a wall showing customers, yes, we have it, but unfortunately, it's not available for sale. So just exposing how many I have could give a false expectation to a customer saying, I got three, I can go get them. Now, really, I only have one available for sale, and that one's moving around the store right now in a customer's cart. So I don't have any. So we got to figure out how to solve that problem before you expose inventory. But to me, of the retailers that are using RFID, how in the world do you start to share the actual how many? I mean, Target does a great job. Only three left. Great marketing people. Only two left. Come pick it up now, right? And they're very confident to be able to do that. I'm just surprised that other retailers are not adopting that methodology.
Well, as am I, right? And they're going to have to. And you're right about the visibility to that. And if now if you're doing buy online pickup in store, and unless those shifters are thinking of that buy online pickup in store, normally what happens is when we go out and let's say you're going to buy that TV, is you go to the website and you say, ah, this is the TV I want. I'm gonna buy it. I'll pick it up in the store. And the retailer, the good ones, and most are doing this now. They say, okay, we'll let you know when that item. Right. And so if it shows that they had four and then they go look and go, oh man, this one's not ready for sale. This one's on the wall. And customers just picked up the other two. Darn, we don't have any for sale. Well, they can let that consumer, the consumer's gonna be very disappointed because they can't pick it up. But I've started seeing retailers do this lately where you come back and they say, you know what, we don't have it. We will ship it to you and get it there to you, tomorrow. And in major metropolitan areas, they will say, we'll get it to you today. You were going to come pick it up. We can't get it to you because you want to go pick up the store, but we'll get it to you today. Or hey, we've got another store that's in another part of town that has it. Do you want to pick it up there? So they're doing a much better job. Some, not all, some still just you just get an email that says, I'm sorry, we don't have that product in stock. And as soon as you do that, you if this is a national brand item, you've lost that customer.
So we've got a question from the audience that I think is a really fair one to kind of to talk through. This is Ursula has a question. If inventory accuracy is so key, Why is it so hard for retailers to prioritize it? In fact, is a task that gets deprioritized many times. Is there a better way to sell the importance of inventory accuracy to the C-suite? Maybe connected to it bare to the bottom line. You speak to a lot of C-level folks. How do you get them? Because inventory accuracy, it's sort of like, it's just one of those KPI that feels like an in-process thing. How's that going to affect my sales, et cetera? But it's a critical part of doing that. How do you get the right level of people get excited about what they think is probably an in-process measurement, which is inventory accuracy?
You know, Mike, I've been evangelizing inventory accuracy for, 15 plus years now. And, you think it's almost common sense. And I appreciate the question because it is like, well, if it's so important, why wouldn't a retailer want high inventory accuracy? There, and I have the opportunity to bite it in to talk to C-suite folks about inventory accuracy, and I'll relate to you one. And again, where I'm obviously not going to mention any names. And I knew I was coming in to talk about inventory accuracy, and this was the CEO, the CFO, the head, person in store ops, and I mean, there are 8 or 10 people in the room. So we go in to talk about inventory accuracy and the importance of that, and so. I'm about halfway into talking about it, and the CEO turns to the head of supply chain in over store ops and said, "What is our inventory accuracy?" And the person said, 99%, sir. Well, what they didn't know is I'd actually send a team from the lab to audit stores before I went and had this meeting. Mm-hmm. And their inventory accuracy was south of 60%.
Mm-hmm.
So first thought is, well, is that person lying to the CEO? And the answer is no. It is it's the way that they have been measuring inventory accuracy and the way that they ought to measure inventory accuracy. So when I talk about inventory accuracy, I'm talking about accuracy at the SKU level, right? That so if somebody wants this t-shirt in white V-neck of this size, then that's a SKU. And if you have it or you don't, it's either accurate or it's not, right?
Yep.
But the way many retailers still measure this is they measure by category. And they say they measure actually from a financial side in some cases, but if not the financial side, they just measure it from each. As they say, you know what, in the t-shirt category, we should have 1,000 packages of t-shirts and we have 990. So we're at 99%. Right? And that's just not inventory accuracy because that's not consumer level inventory accuracy.
Right.
Right? The consumer, they don't care that you have 990 packages of t-shirts. They care that you have this white V-neck in a large.
Yep.
That's what they care about. And so part of it is a shift in the way that retailers have been thinking about that because some retailers measure on that category level. Some measure just on a financial level. As they say, oh, we should have $10,000 worth of t-shirts. We have $9,900 worth of t-shirts. And so therefore it's 99%. We have to shift that focus. That goes back to the eras of retail. The consumer is in charge and we've got to think about the consumer facing SKU and getting that inventory accuracy up so that we can get visibility and accuracy to the single unit. That's the key.
Yep. And I think Ursula, just to build on that, it is incredibly insightful because I would said consumer facing and it's at the store item unit level kind of thing. So the first thing I do is I'd go find some examples where you don't think it is to debate that number because usually it's not somebody trying to deceive the CEO. Usually it's, hey, we're at 99% accuracy. And, Dr. Hargave, you and I worked with one retailer that they would take 47 different, but if it's on a Tuesday and it's after 3 o'clock, then it's this. And oh, we're at 99% accurate. No, you're not. You put a bunch of caveats in there. But when you look at it through the consumer's eyes, the shopper's eyes, you're not 99%. You're disappointing your customers all the time. And by the way, just for a quick soundbite, it's amazing. Forget omnichannel for a second. There are three pieces of data that you need to know when you need product from a warehouse to a store. How much do I have, which is my on hand? How much do I think I'm going to sell, which is my sales forecast? And if I order it today, when will I get it? That's lead time.
Yep.
Well, two out of three of those are probably wrong. The on-hand accuracy and the sales forecast are probably wrong. So we got three numbers. Two of them are probably wrong. It's amazing we got as much stuff on the shelf as we did. And that's why we've got full back rooms, all kinds of stuff, because we don't want to run out of product. But it's really because we've got a fundamental replenishment. The data, garbage in, garbage out. When you feed bad data and things, bad things happen.
Yep.
All right. Let me change gears a little bit. Let's go back to on-hand accuracy is important. Unfortunately, one of the things, especially when we get outside of apparel, there are factors that determine whether a product is available to sell or not. Okay. The example that I used is the televisions. I've got a television on the wall. I've got a television on a display showing a video. I've got one back in claims, et cetera. So yes, I have three televisions. That specific store item has three, but none of them are available for sale because they're all preoccupied for something else.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about something that I call item serialization, and I'll share my screen real quick for those of you who haven't seen it. I think this is a really important kind of topic that we talk through. This is not a serialization conversation because we've had several of those before, but the basic UPC is a UPC, which we've all seen for years. It's UPC quantity. UPC is this, and I've got 24 of them. Great. Thank you very much. What RFID does and what, frankly, GS1 Sunrise 2027 does is start to leverage serialized data. So it adds a UPC to it. It adds a unique serial number. Those two combined together are actually the itemized serial number. So I don't just have a UPC and a quantity of 50. I have one of 50, two of 50, three of 50. I have the ability to assign attributes and selling capability to each one of those items. I know we've talked about this forever, Dr. Hargrave, but I don't think it's inappropriate to continue. People who are implementing systems have got to be able to capture and maintain that lower level of inventory and serial numbers, and not just get the real easy thing, which is, oh, I found 50 of those. Let me just put on hand of 50. Talk to us about the role. I'll stop sharing my screen. Talk to us about the role that this item serialization, which is inherently part of RFID, the way it works, and how is it going to continue to allow retailers to be able to expose their on-hands to customers?
Yeah, you know, and that's, thanks for bringing that up, because that really is the key. And, you know, again, although I've worked in RFID for a long time, you know, when you parse RFID, right, RF is the technology side, ID is really, you know, separately, they don't mean much. You put them together, you know, RFID is just a data carrier. It's going to carry that serial number. But if you don't do anything with that serial number, RFID can't really help you. And you've got to have that visibility, you know, from as close to point of manufacture as you can. You get that item level down to the individual. We talked about visibility to that single unit. That's where it comes in with inventory accuracy, right? Because now I know exactly what I have. There's differentiation even among, you know, if I've got 50 white V-neck T-shirts of size large, I've got 50 different serial numbers because I know exactly what we have in those. Here is what concerns me, Mike, about serialization in where we're at right now, and it's contributing to our inventory accuracy issue, is even some of those that are using RFID, their systems are not set up to use the data. Their systems are all based upon UPC. And so what they do is they get RFID, they read all this data, then they collapse it into the UPC. Well, as soon as you collapse that data, you've lost all the richness of the serial number.
Yep.
Now, that's easy for me to say because harder for retailers to do, because all of their systems are built on that UPC level. All their master data is built around that. And to take a shift from that to serialization, that's a huge, huge systems change. You think about everything that it impacts, right? Where we used to look at things at UPS, now or not UPS, UPC, and now we're looking.
They appreciate the free plug. Good job.
And
don't you live in Memphis?
Isn't it? Yes.
FedEx, yeah. Good job.
So, you know, let me make sure I mention FedEx while I'm here. But they lose all that richness, and that's one thing that I see that retailers really were not thinking that far ahead of. Oh, okay. Well, now I've got this serialized data. How do I store it, and what do I do with it? And you know, now we're seeing retailers. Well, let me store it over here, and it'll be separate from my system, and we'll collapse it and try to use it. And it gets very convoluted. And I think, Mike, that contributes to part of the issue that we're having.
Well, and I think the other part, and here's the unlock. It's hard because it is hard. All of our legacy systems are built on UPC quantity. Everything, yep. Our entire supply chain, our EDI platform, everything is built on UPC quantity.
Yep.
Here's what's going to unlock that. What's going to unlock that is the additional use cases beyond the store, I think will help that. This whole opportunity for the elimination of claims or the dispute of claims, of product authentication. You ship me Nike product. No, it's not a Nike product. It's rip-off product. Yep. Those are the kinds of problems you can solve and we've got this great platform called EPCIS as part of the GS1 standards.
Exactly.
That's been around for 20 years. We've never really, in my opinion, we've never really taken advantage of it. And we did the CHIP project with Auburn University while you were still there. And we're still talking about trying to create a platform that allows us to be able to share that lower level of serialized data across the supply chain to solve these big problems. It's hard. It is really, really hard lift to do, but we're going to get there. People are going to figure out how to get there. But to me, that's how you stop the, just summarize it up and say UPC quantity, because I need that information to dispute these claims that is going on in this authentication. And obviously people like pharmaceutical and food, et cetera, they leverage that RFID serialized data to do a lot more than just UPC quantity. So we'll get there. It's just, it's been a painful process to try and get to break that, because everybody just wants to make the easy UPC quantity and be done with it. Right.
Yeah. I agree. And I tell you one bright spot, and it encourages me though, is with Sunrise 2027, right, and introducing that at the point of sale via a scan, you know, where you can scan it and using existing scanners to be able to do that. I'm very encouraged because that will help drive that serial number to checkout. Then when you marry that with an RFID tag on there that gives you that visibility all along the supply chain, I think that will maybe that catalyst, Mike, that will push people to, hey, we've got to have serialization. Now, look, again, as you said, it's a heavy lift. I mean, it's to go from your systems being UPC to serialized data. It's a heavy lift. But I think that Sunrise 2027 is going to help companies go there and start unlocking this. And you're exactly right about all these other unlocks from shrink, you know, to gray market, to black market, to all these things. Well, you get that unlock with the serial that you can't serialize information that you can't get with UPC.
Yeah. The one thing I'm talking to GS1 about, maybe you could help me plug this as well. I think in addition to the EPC symbol on every RFID-enabled product, we need to have a 2D barcode representing that unique serial number on it as well. Well, why would I want to do that? Because you know how long it takes to do those things. But if I get rid of the UPC on that label and replace it with a 2B barcode, people can start reading the serial number at point of sale without trying to install RFID readers that we know is going to get overreads and misreads and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Kyle just asked a question. It's not really an RFID. It's not really an omnichannel question, but I think it's fair. What are the limitations to RFID? Metal fixtures and metal items interfere with the accuracy of scanning the tags? And your response, since you used to lead the Auburn RFID lab, is?
We know how to, we can't defy the laws of physics, but we certainly know how to use them and get around some of the things that are obstacles. And, you know, if we were having this conversation in 2003, then we would say, boy, that's a tough one. Let us figure it out. but we've done this long enough now. We know, you know, and the lab does a great job of grading and certifying tags, right, on different products and different uses. So you can be rest assured that the tags work. We know that, you know, if you're on metal shelves or around water, that how you need to merchandise that product and, you know, what type of readers you need and so forth. So where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that was a big issue. And we spent a lot of time then at, you know, answering the question, does the technology work and under what conditions? We now have enough intelligence in the industry where that is a relatively minor issue.
I agree with you. And by the way, let's build an add on to that. Not only metal, you know, we've had examples, and I won't tell you the retailer, but we were working on a project with RFID for automotive tires, right? Mm-hmm. And some of those tires are held in outside the store in a big metal container. And people are like, well, this will never work. I go, no, it's going to work better. You go inside that metal container and do an RFID scan, it'll take 13 seconds because it's going to bounce all over the place. You'll get everything before you even walk up and down the aisle. So you can leverage metal for good in this case. The other one, which is really issue, is liquids. And, you know, the people at the Auburn Lab, Synthol, and some of the various RFID manufacturers are coming up with very creative ways of, like, putting the RFID on the inside of the metal cap. So you don't have to read through the liquid, but you can read through read the inside of the cap. Yeah. They're learning how to put RFID tags on metal spray cans because they're leveraging different approaches. They're thinking outside the box to solve some of these problems. So I don't sense a day in my lifetime anywhere where entire big mass merchandiser is going to be 100% RFID tag. I don't see us tagging watermelons anytime soon. I just don't see it. Could be wrong, but I think there's some product that just really doesn't make sense either from an RF standpoint, physics standpoint, or just from a price standpoint, doesn't make sense. But certainly, you know, we've got more and more people that are solving more of these problems for sure. Yep. Cool. So we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to kind of give you the floor. What is your kind of, if you were going to give us kind of one or two omni-channel priorities, can be RFID related or can just be omni-channel. What's the messaging to the retail supply chain folks out there about what we have to be looking at and focusing on to make omni-channel successful?
Well, and, you know, Mike, we've really talked about it, so I'm just going to repeat that just the importance. There's two fundamental things, and I'll send you back to the RFID house or the omni-channel house, right? That it all starts with inventory accuracy, right? It all starts with inventory accuracy. And if you don't have inventory accuracy as the foundation for your omni-channel house, your omni-channel house is not going to stand. I mean, mm-hmm. You can try to stand it up. I'll give you a quick example, Mike, and I know we're running out of time, but we had a retailer we were working with who their CEO said, I want us to be on this buy online, pick up in store. So they brought the lab in. We talked to them about, hey, you got to do that. You got to get to inventory accuracy. You got to go use RFID to get to that level. You got to take inventory, you know, on this case, probably once a week or so, you know, to get the good insight. So we talked to them and then we didn't hear anything back from them for a while. And then saw them and said, hey, what happened? So, oh, We're BOPUS. We got our BOPUS system up and going. And I said, really? You got RFID? No. Yep, we got it without RFID. And I said, well, how'd you do that? Oh, well, we figured it out. And they said, you know, what we do is that, you know, we're not really sure what we have, so we build in a buffer. So we're not going to show you inventory on an item if we have less than four items. So if we have less than four items, you're not going to see it as a consumer. That way we kind of protect that consumer, don't want to come to the store.
So their solution was to hide inventory.
Their solution was to hide inventory, right? Now, many retailers do. They'll build in a buffer, yep. Right? They don't know. So, but this particular one, this is the hilarious part of this particular one, is they build in a buffer of four universally across all products. Their average SKU depth was two.
Oh.
So if you go to their website, there was like a thousands of items that they had. There was a handful. Literally a handful of items, but they, hey, CEO wants to step up because we're at BOPUS. So You've got to have that inventory accuracy. You've got to have that visibility to that individual item, which means serialization. So the two keys, inventory accuracy and serialization.
Yep.
Now, I want to read to you something, Mike, if I may.
Sure.
Because we've been talking about omnichannel, and you know, it's funny how we start getting comfortable with a term like omnichannel and what it means, right? You know, product anywhere, anytime, any place, seamless, view, one seamless view of the customer. Well, I want to read to you, I printed out here, this was McMillan from Walmart at CES, talking about adaptive retail. So I don't know if Walmart coined this term, but they've been using it as adaptive retail. He described it as Walmart is a people-led omni-channel retailer dedicated to helping people save money and live better. Perfect. And then the Walmart CTO, Suresh Kumar, went on to define what adaptive retail means because Doug McMillon had mentioned it. And here's Suresh's definition. Shopping today is an offline and online experience, and Walmart is bringing the best aspects of all channels. This is adaptive retail. Every engagement is interconnected, frictionless, and exceeds expectations. We are not thinking separately about e-commerce or in-store. We are designing one adaptive, seamless experience.
Hmm.
That's omnichannel, by the way, Mike.
Yeah, sure is.
But now we've got a term out there, adaptive retail, that's, you know, that we'll see if it catches hold. But I wanted to throw that out in case any of our listeners today what does adaptive retail mean? Well, it's really another term for omnichannel. And Suresh's definition of adaptive is a great definition of omnichannel and what we're trying to accomplish with omnichannel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, part of Doug's new vision statement that I didn't hear you say, people-led omnichannel and tech-powered, which is a really important piece of that, which is, you know, retailers like Walmart are spending an enormous amount of money on tech and RFID and things like that. And they've been very public about it, so I'm not sharing anything out of context here, that's going to be a key unlock to getting their inventory accuracy so they can do that kind of stuff. Because you can build a great omni-channel platform, but if you feed it bad data, garbage in, garbage out. We learned that back in early programming days.
100%.
Dr. Hargrave, I can't thank you enough for taking time, especially when you're in Washington, D.C. Go and take care of your day job. We appreciate your leadership so much in this. I believe you're going to be speaking at RFID Journal as well. So if you have a chance to go to RFID Journal, please say hi to Dr. Hargrave. Any closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, Mike, I just appreciate having me on. Thanks for, you know, continuing to evangelize inventory accuracy and RFID and serialization, because we could, retail is getting better. We can make it better. And I appreciate all your leadership in the industry. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Take care, everybody. Thank you.